This is a sort of general overview-ish topic of the different sort of structures for, particularly for client server systems, where you have one process trying to talk to another. There's lots of different sort of architecture considerations that you can put in. Okay. Firstly, there's things that you've probably seen before of the OSI protocol stack. And what we're trying to do, when you need to look at that to say, where is it when you're writing applications that you have to pay attention to the communications that are going on? So eventually, you're going to end up with signals sent across the Ethernet cable or on your local network or on the wide area network. And in order for communications to take place, there has to be a shared language between both sides, between the client and the server. And these protocols, they act at all sorts of different levels. So it's not just the stuff that goes across the Ethernet wire, but there's all the levels higher up than that as well that get involved in it. And the way it's typically done is by encapsulation. So the higher levels don't really know much about the lower levels. They just pass information down, sent across, information gets passed up, and there are little wrappers that take place going down and unwrappers that take place going up. So the OSI protocol consists of, or the OSI protocol stack, consists of physical layer down at the bottom up to application layer right at the top. And have all of you seen this before? Anyone not seen it? Okay, so we can go through this fairly quickly then. So your network layer provides switching and routing. The transport layer provides transfer between the endpoints. And so it means you don't have to worry about the route to get there. Session layer is looking at how you establish connections between applications. So you have a session that takes place between applications on both sides. Presentation layer, in the past it's not been particularly important, but now, with particularly with things like encryption taking place, or encryption required, then people are starting to pay more attention to presentation layer. So what this is the client may have one format of the data, may need to change it into a different format before sending it across. So if you're doing encryption, you start off with unencrypted, change it to encrypted, and then send it. And then the encrypted data gets unencrypted before handing back to the application. And then the application layer itself supports the final end processes. The mapping onto TCP protocol is that all of those top layers, session, data representation, application, are all handled by the TCP/IP application layer. Whereas the lower levels are handled by TCP or UDP sitting on top of IP, sitting on top of the hardware. So it's sort of compacted quite a bit. There are lots of different protocols being devised at the moment. Firewire, USB, pseudo terminals, lots and lots of different ones. Some of those, they're still often built in this kind of layered manner. What else is there? Bluetooth and so on. They still have the same kind of principles that you, at the application layer, you are dealing with some issues, lower levels dealing with other issues. Networking, I'll just skip straight over that. You know what a LAN is, a WAN and a MAN and so on. Gateways, generic terms for something that connects two or more different networks. Bridges operate at one layer. Routers also put in which route it's going to go on and so on. Let's skip past that. Okay. More importantly now, from our point of view, what we want to do is have an application sending data to another application, and in order to do so, it will need to go through various encapsulations. So, for example, there's a protocol called Trivial FTP. TFTP is about the simplest way of doing a file transfer from one place to another. So it's like FTP, but it's even simpler. If you want to send, you'd use TFTP if you want to send the contents of a file from one place to another. In order to do that, you start off with at least a little chunk of the file, and in front of that, you need to put some sort of header for the TFTP protocol. And that header would have information such as maybe the name of the file, how many bytes are in the file, some little checks in there so that things that receive it can figure out what kind of header it is and what kind of information's in there. So some information is added to the raw data to say how it's being moved by that particular protocol. If you're doing a different mechanism, if you're doing HTTP, you have, say, data is a URL. The header would be get the URL with some other stuff around it to say what it is that you're trying to do. TFTP usually works across the UDP protocol, and UDP packets also have another header added onto there. UDP hands it down to IP, which puts another header on, which puts another header on at the Ethernet layer. So what starts off as a small chunk of data then becomes a fairly large packet at the Ethernet layer. This gets sent across to the other side, and the Ethernet layer will look at the header. If it's okay, we'll throw it away, pass it up to the next layer, the UDP layer, or the IP layer, sorry. The IP layer will look at the header. If that's okay, we'll pass it up to the UDP layer, which if that's okay, we'll pass it up to TFTP, which is the application layer, and that will finally figure out what the data is that was sent and save it in a file somewhere. There are two basic connection models: connection-oriented, connection-less. So this is what is the mechanism used for sending data across. Connection-oriented is where you set up a single connection where you can send lots of different messages across that single connection. And the messages can flow both ways, two-way communications, and when the session's over, the connection's broken. And this is based upon the analogy with the phone conversation. Dial the number, chat away, and then at the end, you hang up. And TCP is connection-oriented. Okay. The other alternative, connection-less, is where you send messages independently of one another, and that's based on sending individual mail messages. So if you drop a bunch of envelopes into the mailbox, they may end up going different routes, may end up out of order, and so on. So connectionless may arrive out of order, and major example of that is the IP protocol and also UDP protocol. Okay. IP is below TCP, so you've got the IP layer, the TCP layer. This is connectionless. TCP is connection-oriented. So what's done at the TCP layer is to put things like ID numbers into the packets so that even if they arrive out of order, then TCP can put them back into the right order. It can also check if messages have gone missing, make requests for them to be resent, and so on. So it's possible to build a connection-oriented protocol on top of a connection-less one. And it's also possible to go the other way. HTTP over TCP. TCP is connection-oriented, but HTTP is connection-less. So if you do a series of GET requests from a browser, normally each one of them acts independently, does a GET, the data comes back, drops the connection, the next one does another GET and fetches over another connection. So it's possible to build connection-less over connection-oriented. this is a, in fact, with HTTP, this is a bit of a nuisance being connectionless, because if you're fetching a document which has got lots of images in it, for example, connectionless would mean establishing a TCP connection, dropping it for the first image, starting it again, dropping it for the second image, starting again, dropping it, and so on. And that can waste a lot of time. So as an optimization, things like HTTP 1.1 have, they still regard as connectionless, but they do little fudges in there to keep connections open temporarily. So it's sort of a 50-50 kind of mechanism. Okay. The standard communications model, if you're using things like TCP or UDP or HTTP or lots of them, is that you've got a timeline going downwards, somebody making requests, and somebody else responding to those requests. The one making the requests sends a message with the address of who it wants to talk to. The IP, the TCP layers are responsible for getting it across to that responder address. The responder, when it receives the message, is told who it comes from, so that the responder knows not only who it's from, but who to send a reply back to. And some processing will take place in the middle. A reply will be prepared and sent back to the receiver. And typically, between the send and the receive, the requester would just block, waiting for the response to come back. So the normal mechanism, send and block on the requester side, whereas on the responder side, it's usually blocked all the way through here, waiting for a message to come in. When it does, goes into some sort of activity, sends a reply, and then blocks again. There are other communications models, and we'll come up against some of these later. Event-driven models, you've probably come across with things like AWT, even email, lots of things where one side is just waiting for information to be given to it by an event being generated. And with event-generated methods, things are normally blocked, waiting for events to occur, and they occur by being placed in some sort of event queue or sent somehow. Another alternative, different style of programming again, is the procedure call mechanism, which is what you're used to from standard Java programming, where the ordinary procedure call, all the code is within the program, you've got a single stack. When you make a new procedure call, it pushes a new stack frame on, jumps to a new location in the code, and carries on. So that's the normal sort of fairly fast procedure call mechanism. These have been extended outwards in two different ways. One is to dynamic linked library calls, and this is where you have the compile code for the program plus the compile code for a library. And when it's executing, the code here may say, I need something from the library over here. So it will make a jump to wherever that, or will pull that library code in, and then make a jump to that library code, and carry on from there. What that involves is, if the library code is already in memory, it can use it straight away. Otherwise, it may have to pause for a little while it loads that extra code in, and then jump to that extra code. This type of mechanism takes place more or less invisibly. This is supported by the operating system for DLLs under Windows and shared objects under Unix. It's also the mechanism used by Java internally. It will load up class files when it needs them. You don't need to see this happening. You don't need to worry about it too much. What we'll do later on, after we've done a lot of the TCP stuff, is we'll switch to the remote procedure call method, which tries to wrap up the send-receive mechanism in something more familiar that looks like a procedure call. So in RPC, you have an ordinary client process running, starts off at main, some point gets down to a procedure call which is going to be executed remotely. And those are specially coded. They can be done by hand or automatically, but what the remote procedure call will do internally is to say the real location for the code for this is not on this client machine, but is over on a different server machine. And somehow we've got to get the message across from the client machine to the server machine so that it can run a process over there and return a result back. What's done on the client side is that there are a name of a procedure plus some parameters, and they get wrapped up in a message, such as the parameter names and values, wrapped up in a message which is then sent across to a receiving process. So from the send receive is exactly like that. It's exactly like this message passing model. So starts off as a procedure call, but then the implementation sends a message which is received. The processing part that takes place is to reconstitute the remote procedure call and execute that remote procedure call as a local call over on the server side. So this is a normal procedure over on the server, which maybe returns a result in Z. The rest of the receive, following the procedure execution, is the return message which goes back to the client side. And the client side then says, once it's figured out what the return value is, this procedure call, which was executing locally here, exits with the return value in C. So it starts off as procedure call, becomes message, becomes procedure call remotely, becomes message, becomes return from procedure call. And so something like that appears to behave as though it's a, as far as the client's concerned, it looks like an ordinary procedure call from the client side, but is actually involving the networking. And things like CORBA, web services, Java RMI, most of these more advanced systems are based on this remote procedure call mechanism. So a lot of what we'll be doing, the first half we'll be spending looking at this kind of stuff, TCP/IP type messages, and then the second half we'll be looking at these RPC type systems. Okay. All right. Why don't we take a break for 5 minutes then?